Thanks for tuning in to the Next Level Church podcast. For more information, check out our website at nextlevelchurch.net.
Hey, good morning to you. My name's Rob. I'm one of the pastors here at Next Level. Very honored for you guys to be here today. I want to start off like we do most weeks, where I give you a chance to talk to God. And the reason that I want to do this is not that I'm trying to force anything on you. I know that some of you are Christians. You've been Christians for a long time, but I also know that some of you come and you're a little skeptical about God, and maybe you don't even believe. And I'm not trying to force this prayer thing on you. I just want you to know that what you're about to hear is not a TED talk. It is not a motivational speech to make your life better. It is an attempt to talk through a text that we believe has the power to literally change our lives, and it gives us a chance to hear from God. And so I want us just to prepare our hearts and just to take a second to just talk to God and give him permission. He doesn't need permission, but just give him permission. God, would you speak to my heart? And there's a second part of the prayer that I'll invite you to pray. And the second part is, God, would you give me courage to do whatever you tell me to do? Because the truth is, when God speaks, it is hard, it is difficult, and we need the courage to follow through whatever he tells us to do. So I want to give you a few seconds just to pray and talk to him and ask him to speak to you, and then we'll dive in. God, we thank you for still speaking today, and God, right now, I just invite you into this place. God, I ask that you would just speak in ways that we never could ask or imagine. I ask that you would just comfort us with your love, and that you would say what we need to hear. God, for those that are here and their faith is barely holding on, God, would you just comfort them? Would you let them know that you hear them? For God, those that are strong in their faith, God, would you continue to lead them and show them how much you love them? Would you just say something fresh and new to us? Would you speak to our hearts? Would you help us to do whatever you tell us to do? And God, I just ask that the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart will be acceptable in your sight. But Lord, you are my rock and my redeemer. In Jesus' name, amen. Well, today we continue our series entitled Here Be Dragons. And the series title is based off of something that happened in the 1500s. There was some cartographers who visited North America, and it was a new land that they were exploring, and as they were exploring it, there were certain parts of North America where they could not explore, they couldn't get to, based off the way that the land was. There were some areas where they couldn't see it with their own eyes, and these explorers were afraid of what they could not see, and so when they did the map, when they literally made out the map, in the spaces where they could not see, they wrote the phrases, here be giants, here be fiery scorpions, here be dragons. And it was as if to say, not only have we not seen these lands, but these are lands that no one should go see because this is scary stuff. We don't want to visit these areas. We don't know what will happen. There are literally dragons in this area. Well, you fast forward to the 1800s, and a guy by the name of John Franklin took the map, and out of frustration, he crossed out everywhere where it talked about giants, he crossed it out. And wherever it said fiery scorpions, he crossed it out. And wherever it said dragons, he crossed it out. And in those spaces, he wrote in big, bold letters, here is God. And I believe in the premise of this series, the main idea of this series is simply this: in your greatest fear lies a great opportunity to experience the presence of God. In your greatest fear lies a great opportunity to experience the presence of God. Now, some of you are here today and you're saying, like, I just don't have any fears, like I laugh in the face of fear, like I'm not scared of anything. And I would say that you're not being 100% honest with yourself. There is something that you fear. There's something that I fear. There are things out there that we say I'm a little unsure about, especially when it comes to the unknown. We always fear what we do not know. If it's a home run, if you know the outcome, you can go with confidence. But when you're kind of questioning and saying, I don't know what's out there, I don't know, that's a new land that I've never visited, the first reaction is to have fear. And one thing I want to make sure that you guys get in this series is that fear is not a sin. Fear is an emotion that God has given you. And having normal, everyday fears is actually natural and healthy. You should not, especially if you're a Christian, you should not walk up to a poisonous snake and grab it by its face and say, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. You will not bite me. That is not faith. That is being stupid, okay? Do not do that. But you should have some real natural fears. There should be some things in your life that cause you to say, this isn't right. Like, something's stirring up inside of me. And maybe it's even God knocking on the door of my heart saying, there's something wrong here and I need to do something about it. handful of months ago, I was in a 10,000 step challenge. And anyone here have a Fitbit? Anyone have a Fitbit? Okay, 4.5 of you. Okay, awesome. Well, in other circles, Fitbit is a really popular device. You wear it on your wrist, and it keeps track of the steps that you take. And according to someone healthy, you have to take 10,000 steps a day in order to keep your health. And 10,000 steps equals 5 miles. Well, I sit at a desk all day, and so it's very difficult for me to get 10,000 steps. So in order to win this challenge, I had to actually get out and walk at nighttime and walk my neighborhood. And so I left my house, and I live in Hampton, somewhat close to Mercury Boulevard. And I left my house, and I walked down to Mercury Boulevard. And when I got to Mercury Boulevard, I started walking on the sidewalk. And when I got on the sidewalk, I heard pretty close to me a chainsaw. This made me a little bit nervous. I try not to be someone that is just like real jumpy and someone that is really, really, you know, just scares easily. But I'm not used to hearing a chainsaw in Hampton. If it was gunshots, I would have said, this is normal, no big deal. But the chainsaw, it brought a little bit of fear inside of me. And so I literally turned around slowly. I stopped walking. I turned around slowly to see this person with the chainsaw. And I could not see anyone. And I'm looking all around, and there's no trees anywhere that I can see. I'm not around forest. It's Mercury Boulevard. It's like just a Vegas strip of buildings and lights. Like there's nothing to cut down. And I'm looking for this sound, and as I'm looking for it, I hear, which is really coming close to me. And at this point, I start having these visions of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And so I did the only natural thing for any human being to do. I turned my walk into a run, and I ran home as fast as I could. Now, I'm not ashamed of that. I'm not embarrassed. In fact, if you were to say that, yeah, I heard a chainsaw in Hampton, I wasn't scared, I would say, you're a fool. You should run. There should be something inside of you that says, this isn't right. This isn't normal. Like, normally on Mercury Boulevard, there's not a chainsaw convention, so I don't know what's going on here. This is something that's a little bit scary. You should have a healthy relationship with fear. You shouldn't be so petrified that you cannot move, but you should be realistic about the world that you live in. I have some healthy fears. I fear other drivers enough that I wear a seatbelt when I ride my car. Now, I'm not so afraid that I don't get on the interstate and I don't drive a car, but I'm smart enough to know that I may get in an accident one day, and when I do, I want to be protected to the best of my ability. I lock the doors to my house. It's not because I'm deathly afraid. We don't sit around our house thinking, oh, someone's going to break in at any moment. But we lock our doors. We do live in Hampton, where people wield chainsaws for no reason. I have a healthy fear with it. Now, maybe if you live in Pocosin, you don't lock your doors, and you can't understand this healthy fear that I have living in Hampton. But in Hampton, I'm not scared. I love living in Hampton. I absolutely love it. I love my house. I love my neighborhood. But I have a healthy respect to fear, so I lock the doors. There are certain things in your life that you should just say, this is the reality of the world we live in. I'm going to have a healthy relationship with fear. The problem is not that we're afraid of certain things, because certain things deserve the emotion of fear. The problem is that we have some irrational fears. Here's the definition of an irrational fear. It is a persistent, abnormal, and irrational fear of a specific thing or situation that compels one to avoid it. What's that next word? Despite the awareness and reassurance that it is not dangerous. What is an irrational fear? An irrational fear is a fear that causes you to do nothing because you're so afraid. A healthy fear causes you to take action and say, hey, you know, I'm going to lock my doors. I'm going to wear a seatbelt. I'm going to, put a helmet on my kid when he rides his bike. I'm going to have a healthy fear. An irrational fear causes you not to move. And it doesn't matter what anyone says to you. It doesn't matter if people say, hey, listen, we've done this before. It's no big deal. It doesn't matter what people promise you or say, hey, I'll be right there with you. It'll be safe. It doesn't matter what someone tells you. As long as you have an irrational fear, it causes you not to move. Despite what the circumstances say and despite what verses you might have memorized, an irrational fear causes you to just stay in your tracks and not do anything. Now, this series has everything to do with your relationship with God. It is not just about overcoming some fears and going out there and skydiving and Rocky Mountain climbing and riding a bull named Fu Manchu. That is not the main idea of this series. The main idea of this series has everything to do with your relationship with God. Because as long as fear is the driving force in your relationship with God, you will lack intimacy with Him. And I want to show you how fear plays such a big part in our lives. A few weeks ago, we were in a series. It was a totally different series. It had nothing to do with fear. I don't think the word fear was mentioned in any of the talks. It was not the topic at all. And in the series, in YouVersion, the app that we use, I asked the question, what stops you from crying out to God? And so you guys answered. These are anonymous answers. And the number one answer, the reason why you don't cry out to God, is fear. I want to read to you some of the answers, and maybe some of these are even your answers. Again, I can't see the names. They're anonymous. But this is what was said over and over again. Why don't you cry out to God? Fear, both of the unknown and not hearing back. Someone else just wrote fear. Why don't you cry out to God? Fear, that's all they said. Someone else said afraid. The change will include a big change, such as moving to Japan. And then they said authenticity matters, right? I love that they quoted one of our core values in this statement. Another person said, knowing that he might ask me to do something I don't think I can do. Why don't I cry out to God? Because I'm so afraid he's going to ask me to do something that I cannot do. The fear that my past sin is too much for him to love me or change me. Why don't you cry out to God? Because I've messed up so bad that I'm afraid he won't forgive me. Why don't you cry out to God? Fear and pride. Fear with 3 exclamation points. Fear of change, fear of what people think of me, fear of losing my identity, and fear of being free. This person wrote in, why don't you cry out to God? The judgment that I feel from Christians. I want to change, but when I walk in the church and feel such judgment, it makes it hard to truly change because I feel whatever I do will still be judged. What is the heartbeat of that answer? I can't change because I'm afraid of Christians' opinions of me. The fear of not knowing, unable to understand the words. So I hope you guys see that what is stopping you from crying out to God is fear. And this is not just a series to just stick you with adrenaline and make you run out the door and go accomplish big things. This has everything to do with your personal relationship with God. That the very reason you're not crying out on your knees for God to do more is because you're afraid. Fear is eating our lunch, and consequently, we are spiritually starving. Fear is destroying the work of God that he wants to do. Fear is eating our lunch, and consequently, we are spiritually starving. We are so afraid that God might call us to the bunga bunga jungle that we're not getting into his presence. And the thing that we're missing is that if God calls us to something, it's because he is good, and he knows what's best for us, and it's actually an honor to be called by God to do anything. And we're so afraid that God might call us to get out of our comfort zones that we're literally missing the presence of God. Today, I want to talk to you about a text that I think speaks directly to our fear. And whether you're here today and you have some irrational fears like clowns are going to get you, or you have some crazy fears that God's going to call you to the bunga bunga jungle, or maybe you just have some fears that is stopping you from pursuing God and stopping you from doing what God has wired you to do, I think this text is going to speak directly to your life. And what I hope that we'll get out of this is a challenge to do what God is calling us to do. Because I'm just convinced that in graveyards all across America are some of the best dreams that never came to life. Because people were too afraid to act, and they were too afraid to do something about what God had planned in their heart. And so they took those dreams with them to their grave. Our text is going to come from the Old Testament. And if you grew up in the church, you probably don't even question the Old Testament. You just accept it. You just think there's great, amazing, wonderful stories in there. You grew up with them. It's a part of your life. That's the way that I grew up. But if you didn't grow up in the church, the Old Testament is a little bit harder to wrestle with than the New Testament. The Old Testament is a story of God's people before Jesus. And the New Testament is a story of Jesus and the early church. And we spend a lot of time in the New Testament because it's a little bit easier for us to wrap our mind around. The Old Testament is a little bit barbaric. It's a little bit harder to understand. It's different cultures, different people, different things do things. And it's just difficult to wrap our minds around. But we're going to do our best to try to go back thousands upon thousands of years ago to an Old Testament time. And we're going to try to plant ourselves in here and see, because I believe what God said to them in this text is the same message that he's saying to us today. So that being said, let's dive into Judges chapter 6. We're going to start off with 1 through 6. The Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord, and for 7 years he gave them into the hands of the Midianites. Because the power of Midian was so oppressive, the Israelites prepared shelters for themselves in mountain clefts, caves, and strongholds. Whenever the Israelites planted their crops, the Midianites, Amalekites, and the mosquito bites invaded the country. They camped on the land and ruined the crops all the way to Gaza and did not spare a living thing for Israel. neither sheep nor cattle nor donkeys. They came up with their livestock and their tents like swarms of locusts. It was impossible to count them or their camels. They invaded the land to ravage it. Midian so impoverished the Israelites that they cried out to the Lord for help. Okay, let's stop there just for a second, talk about what's going on here. God's chosen people were given a land to live in, but they turned their back on God once again. And God lifted his hand of protection. And currently they are being pursued by these Midians, these people who are like locusts, that they are literally coming in and ravaging the land. Specifically what they're doing is when the Israelites plant crops and the crops are ready to harvest, the Midians are coming in, swooping in and stealing all their food, taking all their cattle, making it impossible for the Israelites to live in this land. This goes on for 7 years. Now, something significant happens here, because when this first starts happening, the Israelites become afraid, and they head up into the mountains, into the caves, and they hide out. Now, this is significant for us, because I don't know about you, but I don't want it to take 7 years before I cry out to God. But I think this text says something about the human condition. And isn't it true that you and I will put up with a whole lot of stuff until we get to rock bottom? We'll go through a lot of difficult things. We'll go through multiple marriages. We'll go through multiple jobs. We'll go through multiple difficult circumstances. And we wait until we get to our rock bottom. And then at our rock bottom, then we say, oh God, please help me. And the Israelites at any time, if they would have just said, God, would you deliver us? Would you fix this? He would have come and he fixed it. But they waited 7 years. Can you just imagine? Put yourself in their shoes for just a second. You're a mom with young kids and you leave your house to climb up into a mountain and to find a new home in a cave. Because you're afraid, and that doesn't make you cry out to God. But finally, after 7 years, when they hit rock bottom, the people said, we've had enough of our own sin, we've had enough of our dumb decisions, we're going to cry out to God. God, would you help me? Now, thankfully, I'm not God. Because if I was God, and I saw someone ignore me for 7 years and not ask for my help, when they finally did, I would say, good luck, you go get it by yourself. I'm not going to help you, you lazy bunch of good nothing. Yeah. But that's not what God does. And I think this is important for us because no matter how far you've run away from God, no matter how many times you've turned your back on God, no matter how long you've tried to do it on your own, the minute you say, God, I'm crying out to you for help, he's there and he listens to you. We have a God of grace and a God of love and a God that doesn't hold our past mistakes against us. And so God listens to their prayer, but here's what you need to understand. When God answers a prayer, it is rarely the way that we would do it. If you're looking for God to behave and act just like you would do it, you're going to be frustrated because God does things that are so much bigger and different than anything we could come up with. Most of the time when he acts, we scratch our head and say, what in the world? But what we're going to see is God does something that seems crazy, but according to God, it is a perfect plan and it ends up being an amazing miracle. So this is the way that God answers the Israelites' prayer. They cry out to God and God sends an angel in Judges 6, 11 through 12. Look what happens next. The angel of the Lord came and sat down under the oak in Ophrah, that's Oprah's mom, that belonged to Joash the Abizarite, where his son Gideon was threshing wheat in a wine press to keep it from the Midianites. Okay, you got to stick with this just for a second because I got to give you a little bit of context. So this text introduces us to a guy by the name of Gideon. And Gideon is threshing wheat in a wine press. Okay. You guys didn't laugh, so you don't get how funny this is. Okay, maybe you just were asleep and you didn't hear the joke. Gideon is threshing wheat in a wine press. That fake laugh doesn't make me feel any better, okay? Okay, we obviously don't get this. We don't know why this is funny because this is a different culture, a different world. And I had to look up, like, what is the significance about this? Why is the author telling us that the hero of the story is threshing wheat in a wine press? Well, let's look at what a wine press and a threshing floor is supposed to look like. This is a picture of a threshing floor. And as you can see, there's an area dug out around hay, and there's some tools that are by the pile of hay. And now, I've never done this myself, but the way that I understand it is that what they would do to sift out the wheat is they would take a pile of wheat and they would throw it up in the air. And the wind would blow out the chaff and the other things that were not supposed to be in the wheat. The wind would take that with it outside of the circle, but the wheat was heavy enough that it would land back in the circle. And so literally, they would take big things of hay and just throw it up in the air and watch the wind blow out the bad stuff, and then the gravity would take down the wheat and they would keep the good stuff, and then they would take their wheat and harvest a crop. Now, this illustration may go way over everyone's head, but if you've ever watched the NBA and you've ever watched LeBron James, before he plays a game, he takes chalk and he like gets his hands all chalky and then he goes poof, and a big cloud of smoke goes up in the air. That's what I picture threshing wheat is like. Like you get there and it's like game time and you take the wheat and it's like poof, you throw it up in the air and the chaff goes blowing out of the circle and the wheat comes down. There's only two of you watched the NBA, but you appreciated that illustration. Now, this is the way that you thresh wheat. But where is Gideon? You can say it like you're actually confident. You can say it out loud. He's in a wine press, okay? Let's look at what a wine press is. A wine press is a hole in the ground where you have to climb in a ladder to get to the bottom of it. Now, if you grew up Baptist, this would be a grape juice press. But if you did not grow up Baptist, this is the way that you got your wine. That in order to step on the grapes, they would go down in the ground and they would step and squish and create a beverage. Now, what is the point of threshing wheat? To throw it up so the air, the wind, would take the chaff out of it. Where is Gideon? In a hole in the ground. Okay? This is incredibly significant because Gideon is doing something that he's not supposed to be doing. And can you imagine how frustrating that would be? I know this isn't how this works. My dad taught me how to thresh wheat. I know I need the wind, but I'm just going to hang out in this wine press and see what happens. Okay, that didn't work. Okay, that didn't work. That's what Gideon's doing over and over again. He's throwing up wheat. The wind's not taking out the chaff, and the wheat is landing on him over and over and over again. Now, here's a question I want you to wrestle with. What do people do when they're afraid? What do people do when they're afraid? Because the text tells us that the reason that Gideon is in a wine press threshing wheat is because he's afraid of the Midians. And fear causes you to do things that are irrational. And whatever you're afraid of in this life, the conclusion, the answers that you come to are never healthy places of where you should be. What do people do when they're afraid? Well, they make really dumb decisions like trying to thresh wheat in a wine press. It doesn't even make sense, but he's so afraid, he's grasping at straws. Fear leads us to do things that we are not supposed to do. Fear leads us to do things that we're not supposed to do. Fear is leading Gideon to be in a wine press when he's supposed to be threshing wheat. It's not the way it works. He's not going to get the right results, but he's so afraid that fear causes him to do something he's not supposed to do. So let me make this practical for you. If you're single and you don't want to be, there's a great chance at some point, maybe it's around every birthday that you have, that you say things to yourself like, what if I just don't get married? What if there's not one for me? What if I can't find the one? What if I'm going to spend the rest of my life alone? And that is a question of fear. And as long as you start with a question of fear, it's going to lead you to do something that you're not supposed to do. And it's going to lead you to go to places where you're not supposed to go. And it's going to lead you to start relationships that you're not supposed to start, all because of your fear of being alone. If you're married, and maybe your marriage is on the rocks, you want to know one of the number one answers couples come up to when their marriage is on the rocks? They say, maybe we just need another kid to keep us together. Well, I just want to throw this out there. Yeah, those of you with kids, you know, that is the dumbest idea in the history of the world. Like, no offense if that's what you've done, but kids do not make life easier. They make it more difficult. And if your marriage is in the rocks, the worst thing you can do is to introduce a baby, because I don't think unhealthy relationships can last the difficulties of a baby. But why do couples do that? Why do so many couples do that? It's because fear leads us to do things that we're not supposed to do. Or maybe you're past the kid phase and your marriage is still on the rocks and you just think, well, maybe I just need to go talk to someone else. Maybe I just need to have a different perspective. And you end up as a guy hanging out with a woman that's not your wife looking for advice. And I just want to tell you, there is no good answers in that conversation. But why do so many couples do that? Because fear leads us to do things that we're not supposed to do. If you're at a job and you see other people getting promotions and you say, well, that guy's getting a promotion because he's cheating the system or because he doesn't have integrity. And in your mind, you think, well, maybe I'm getting passed over because I'm not cheating the system. Maybe I need to do things that are unethical. And I would just say that is fear. You're afraid that you're going to get passed over. And what does fear do? Fear causes us to do things that we're not supposed to do. And any time in your life when you're afraid, it leads you to a wine press where you're threshing wheat. And you will never get the results that you are supposed to get when you're in the wrong place at the wrong time. Where is Gideon? Where he should have been is Gideon should have been out in the open saying, the God of the universe is going to protect me. He's going to provide. Here's my wheat. I've cried out to him. I believe he's going to deliver me and protect me. But instead, he's in a pointless place doing pointless things. Why? Because fear leads us to do things that we're not supposed to do. And in your life, there are some things that you are afraid of. And maybe you're afraid of something like the economy, and you just say, I'm just so scared. What happens if we go on hard times? And that fear, whatever is driving that fear, is going to lead you to do things that you're not supposed to do. Whatever you're afraid of. You're afraid of your safety. You're afraid of your family's safety. And you go out and you start making decisions based off fear. It never leads you to the right choice. Fear always leads us to do things that we're not supposed to do. So look at what happens next. And before it comes up on the screen, I just want you to see if you can see the humor in this. Because I don't know if this was meant this way to be funny. But now that we get this context, I want you to see exactly what happens next. Because this angel of the Lord comes to Gideon. And look at what he says. When the angel of the Lord appeared to Gideon, he said, "The Lord is with you, mighty warrior." Now only two of you got the humor in that, okay? Where is Gideon? In a wine press. And what's he doing? Threshing wheat. Some of you are there. The correct answer is threshing wheat, wine press. Let's try that again. Where is Gideon? What's he doing? Now, here's a new question. Why is he doing it? He's afraid. And what does the angel of the Lord say to him? Hey, mighty warrior, down in the hole. Hey, I just watched you thresh this wheat 12 times, you idiot. Why are you doing this? Mighty warrior? I think this is incredibly important to us because God doesn't address us based off what we're doing, and he especially doesn't address us off of our past. He addresses us off the potential that he sees inside of us. And when God comes... when God calls you, he doesn't say, hey, look, you wimp. When God calls you, he doesn't say, yeah, you know what, you've been divorced 3 times, I can't use you. When God calls you, he doesn't say, yeah, you know that addiction that you just can't kick, I can't use you. When he calls you, he doesn't say, yeah, you've messed up so many times, I can't use you. He doesn't say, yeah, you don't have potential, I can't use you. He sees something inside of you because you are a child of God. And when he sends a messenger to talk to you, he's not talking to you based off your accomplishments and especially not based off your past. He's talking to you based off the potential that he sees in you. And God wants to call you out of the wine press. He wants to call you out of the places where you're most comfortable. And he does want to take you on an adventure. But you got to know, he sees something inside of you that you don't even see inside of yourself. The Lord is with you, mighty warrior. Well, let's see how Gideon replies, because it's just a little bit humorous to me. In Judges 6:13, Gideon says, "Pardon me, my Lord. But if the Lord is with us, why has all this happened to us? Where are all his wonders that the ancestors told us about when they said, 'Did not the Lord bring us up out of Egypt?' But now the Lord has abandoned us and given us into the hand of Midian." All right, you know that you are completely addicted to fear when God sends a messenger to give you a message and tell you what to do, and you respond by arguing. Oh, wait, you call me mighty warrior. We'll get back to that in a little bit, but let's talk just for a second. You say God is with us, but let me just remind God about how bad our situation is at. God, I don't know if you've seen me down, but I'm in a wine press because for the last 7 years, these evil people have taken all of our crops, and I'm scared and I'm afraid. And for 7 years, we've been oppressed, and for 7 years, we haven't seen miracles. Forget the fact that we haven't called out to you. I just want to point out the fact that you haven't done anything. Where are you at, God? God, why aren't you fixing this problem? God, I'm afraid, but you should have done something. Do you not remember that you're the one that parted the Red Sea and let the Israelites walk through it, and you delivered them from slavery? Like, that's you, God, but for us, you haven't done any miracles. I love this insight by Henry Nouwen. He's an amazing author. He says that fearful questions never lead to love-filled answers. Underneath every fearful question, many other fearful questions are hidden. Let me read that again. Fearful questions never lead to love-filled answers. Underneath every fearful question, many other fearful questions are hidden. And in this instance, an angel of the Lord speaks to Gideon, and he calls him a mighty warrior, and Gideon has a whole bunch of fearful questions. But don't you see how bad our world is? Don't you see all these problems? Maybe you can relate to that, because there's a lot of fear in our country today. And I see it all the time posted on Facebook, like, I'm so afraid of the future president of the United States, and if we don't get this right, we're going to mess up everything, and I'm so afraid of the economy, and I'm so afraid of this, and people, we are addicted to fear. And whatever you're afraid of, trace that back to the questions that you're asking, because every fearful question leads to more fear. And now I want to just show you just for a second why we're so afraid of God. We're afraid of everything. And so just for a second, just think about it. What are the questions that you ask when it comes to God? Most people that I know, when they talk about God, they say things like, can God forgive me for my sins? Does God really love me? Can God use me? Fearful questions never lead to love-filled answers. And maybe the reason you're struggling with a relationship with God is because you've started out a place of fear, and you're asking the wrong questions. And fear just leads to more fear. And if you want to experience intimacy with an almighty God, it's got to start with love. And you know what God says? God is a God of love, and he says that perfect love drives out fear. But you've got to start with asking the right questions. Because as long as you're in a wine press saying, oh, this world is so bad, God, what are you doing? God, what are you going to do? God, why don't you fix this? As long as you're asking fearful questions, you will never come up to a healthy solution. So Gideon asks the angel a question, and let's see what happens next. The Lord turned to him and said, go in the strength you have and save Israel out of Midian's hand. Am I not sending you? Pardon me, my Lord, Gideon replied, but how can I save Israel? My clan is the weakest in Manasseh, and I am the least in my family. Okay, so the people have been asking God for a sign. They've been asking God to provide something. They've been asking God to get them out of this hole that they're in. And God finally starts to speak, and what does Gideon say? Well, pardon me. God, don't you see the problems that you have? And God says, no, listen, I know you're afraid. Just go in the strength that you have. I'm going to be with you. But wait a second. Pardon me, God. Let me just tell you something, God. I know you're calling me to do something, but let me tell you not only how bad the world is, but let me tell you just how bad I am. Gideon says, literally to God, I am from the weakest clan in all of Israel, and I'm the weakest in the weakest clan. Okay? He's essentially saying to God, hey, God, listen, when me and my boys get together and go to Buffalo Wild Wings, we order weak sauce on our wings. Like, we are frail bodies. We don't do CrossFit. We do couch fit. Like, there is nothing strong inside of us. We've asked you for help, and now you're asking me to help, and I'm just not good enough. I'm not smart enough. I'm not strong enough. I can't do it. So let me just translate this for you. If you were to sit down with Gideon and say, hey, what's the problem of the day? He would have said, easy, it's the Midianites. They're the fault. They're the problem. They're the one causing all this issue. But then if you would have said, hey, Gideon, what are you willing to do about it? He would have said, whoa, not me. I can't do anything about it. These problems are too big. These things are too scary. I guarantee that every single one of you has a problem in your life. And maybe you look around our world and you see a lot of problems. And when you cry out to God and you say, hey, God, would you just do something? Would you fix something? And God says, hey, I've called you. What are you going to do about it? How do you respond? Oh, surely you're not asking me to do that. Wait, I know there's a lot of homelessness in our area, but surely you're not asking me to do anything about that. Oh, yeah, okay, there's thousands upon thousands of girls that are kidnapped between the ages of 3 and 6 and put into sex trafficking, but that's someone else's problem. Surely you're not asking me to do anything about that. Well, wait, there's a bunch of inequality in America? Well, that's someone else's problem. It makes me angry, but I'm not willing to do anything about it. There's lots of problems in America. Everyone knows the problems, but God, don't call me to fix anything. Why? Because I'm not good enough. I'm not strong enough. I'm from the weakest family. God, if you only knew my past, if you know what I've done, you would not be speaking to me. But God does not speak about our past or our present circumstances. He speaks to our potential and the future which he sees for us. Hey, mighty warrior, I hear you complaining, but what are you doing about it? I don't know who first said this quote, but the first person I heard said it was a pastor and author by the name of Mark Batterson. And I love the quote. The quote simply says, God doesn't qualify or doesn't call the qualified, he qualifies the called. God doesn't call the qualified, he qualifies the called. And if you've ever been sitting in any circumstance where you felt God knocking on the door of your heart and telling you to go make a difference, and your response is, who, me? You're in great company. Because one of the greatest warriors in the history of Israel questioned why God would call him. And every man of God who's ever been called by God, based off the text that we have through the Holy Scriptures, when God called him, he said, who, me? Moses was a stutterer. God said, I hear you. You've been crying out to save the people. I'm going to send you. Oh, who, me? There are some problems in the world, and God is calling you to make a difference. He's calling you to get out of the wine press and to go face your biggest enemy, your strongest fear. He's calling you to face the dragons that you haven't even seen and trust and believe that he will give you everything you need to overcome it. I shared last week about a little bit of the history of starting Next Level Church. And if you weren't here last week, you can listen to the podcast, but there's one part that I didn't add to it that when I finally announced and started talking about this church and it was official, I was sat down by someone and they asked me a question. They said, listen, we don't need another church in our area. Like, don't you know that there's a ton of churches? There's so many churches in our area. Why are you starting a church? What is the difference? Why in the world are you going to start this church? Like, we already have a lot of great churches. And my answer at that moment was, I do think we have a lot of great churches, and I'm not in competition with any of them. I'm not trying to start a church to be in competition, but I'm trying to start a church because I see a problem in the world. And the problem I see is that we have a lot of churches and we have a lot of Christians, but not a lot of people are willing to get their hand dirty and actually get out in the community and make a difference. So I'm starting a church because I don't see a church out there that is willing to get out of the seats and actually go and look people in the face who don't know Jesus and say, hey, I love you. And I'm starting a church because I think that if you gather a group of people together and you put them on mission and you send them out into the world to actually make a difference, I believe they actually can make a difference. And I think there are some serious problems in our world. I think there's some serious problems in our community. And call me stupid, call me naive, say that I'm the dumbest person in the world, but I just believe when you get a group of people together who love Jesus and love each other, they can go out in the world and make a difference. And so why did I start a church? Because there was a problem in the world. And God didn't say, I'm going to send someone else. He said, I'm going to send you. And I fought it and said, I'm not equipped, I'm not qualified, I'm not good enough. And it's the same thing that many of you are sitting in your seat saying right now. There's a problem in the world and you say, I'm not good enough, I'm not qualified. God, I can't do it. And what is God saying to you? Get your butt out of the wine press. Take some leaps of faith. Get up there. If there's a problem, maybe I'm calling you to do something about it. The question is not, why would God call you? The question is, why is he not calling you? And if God's not calling you, it's because you've buried your head in a wine press and you're so afraid that he's going to call you out of your comfort zone. But personally, if I was going to be afraid of anything, it would be a fear of missing out on the greatest adventure of my life because I was so afraid of listening to the voice of God. So what you're going to do with this is up to you. Will you hide away in a wine press or will you listen to the voice of God? Will you pray with me? God, thank you so much for this day and thanks for a chance to come and to wrestle with a text. And we just ask, God, that you would just be stirring up some dreams and some visions and some passions inside of us right now. God, fear is real and fear is scary. And God, we just ask right now that you would just give us a courage that comes only from you. We ask, God, that you would just birth new stories and new visions and new dreams, that we would be a people who live on mission, that we wouldn't just sit around passively complaining about the state of our world, but that we would get up and actively do something to make a difference. We love you, Lord. We thank you that you don't call the qualified, but that you qualify the called. And we thank you, God, that you're not a God of fear, but a God of love. And God, right now, would you just stir us in your love and mercy to make a difference, to do something for your glory. We thank you in advance for what you're going to do. In Jesus' name, amen.
We hope you've enjoyed and learned from today's podcast. If you'd like to connect with us further, you can check out our website, nextlevelchurch.net, or find us on Facebook or Twitter.
Thank you.